Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. As we're taping our show this Monday morning, a little early for the holiday season, fire officials are advising us that a red flag watch is imminent. We'll have details on a fire weather watch that's already in effect, as well as a long-term forecast for the holiday week. Also, a heads up, word is in that the grand jury has reached a decision in Ferguson, Missouri, in the shooting death of Michael Brown, so you might want to stay tuned to your national news for an update on that, or check eastcountymagazine.org. We'll get a story up later today. On our show today, we'll have details for you on a hearing date set for a lawsuit in which Alpine taxpayers and the Alpine School District are asking a judge to stop the Grossmont Union High School District from spending bond money that they say should be used to build a high school in Alpine. Hear about an alert from San Diego State about an attempted kidnapping over the weekend of a San Diego State student on campus. On our Capitol Report, we'll have information about a report just issued by a House Intelligence Committee controlled by Republicans and how it debunks the Republican leadership's claims about Benghazi. In short, the report found no wrongdoing by any administration officials, the CIA, or the military. Hear about a lucky local astronomer who won a major prize for his role in a major cosmic discovery. Our Crime Beat report has news about the identity of a homicide victim in a crime under investigation in Lemon Grove. Our newsmaker today is Maestro Anthony Mostardo with the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, which has a concert coming up December 7th in the college area. Hear our interview with this Spring Valley resident, and just in time for the start of the holiday season, we hope you'll enjoy our sneak preview of this group's marvelous performance of Vivaldi's Gloria. In honor of Native American Heritage Month, on the second half of our show today, we'll be replaying our Tribal Beat interview with Kumeyaay Elder Charlie Brown, including some exciting stories from his days as a Forest Service hotshot jumping out of perfectly good airplanes to put out forest fires. On Green Scene, learn about golden eagles spotted in Hakumba Hot Springs near the site of proposed major energy projects. And speaking of big birds, we'll have some turkey cooking tips and safety advice for all of you who are cooking up feasts for Thanksgiving this week. Plus, we'll replay our interview with Pastor Terry Masango from the Salvation Army here in East County, who wants to remind everybody about the drive-through food drive this Tuesday to collect food for needy families this Thanksgiving, as well as the upcoming East County Toy and Food Drive to bring cheer to hundreds of children in need this holiday season. From all of us at East County Magazine, to all of you and your families, we wish you a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Now please stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
The National Weather Service has issued a fire weather watch for San Diego County's inland valleys and mountain areas in effect now through Tuesday due to warm temperatures, low humidity, and gusty winds up to 80 miles per hour that are forecast. Residents are advised to monitor the news for possible red flag warnings. The strong winds are expected to peak on Tuesday, but the good news is that the wind should diminish later in the week while warm temperatures will remain. With much of the nation digging out from heavy snowfall and blizzard conditions here in San Diego, warm, dry weather is forecast for Thanksgiving Day, with temperatures over 80 degrees, perfect for a Thanksgiving picnic feast. This has been Leon Thompson with the Weather Report on KNSJ.
Should an injunction be issued to stop the Grossmont Union High School District from spending bond funds in order to protect money to build an Alpine High School? That's what Judge Joel Pressman will be deciding in San Diego Superior Court. He'll be hearing an injunction request on December 5th at 1:30 from the Alpine Union School District and the Alpine taxpayers for bond accountability. They argue that the Grossmont District is unlawfully wasting school bond revenues approved by the voters for an Alpine High School by spending the money from Prop H or U on other unauthorized projects. The Alpine plaintiffs seek only to block bond fund use on any new or future construction projects, not interrupt any pending projects or construction projects that are already contracted.
Alpine parents are seeking to unify the Alpine District and allow it to build the long-promised high school. The San Diego County Board of Education has agreed and recommended that the State Board of Education approve the unification request. The lawsuit seeks an injunction on the Grossmont District spending until the State Board of Education rules on unification. Despite a grand jury finding of bait-and-switch tactics regarding the district's handling of Prop H and Prop U bond monies promised for the Alpine High School, the district has refused to turn over a share of the bond funds into an escrow account that could be used to build the high school if the state approves the Alpine unification proposal. The lawsuit argues that harm to Alpine is imminent and irreparable if an injunction is not granted. The suit accuses the district of contemptuously denouncing the unification petition and Alpine's right to an equitable portion of bond funds, even though the County Board of Education unanimously recommended this action. At a recent board meeting, the Grossmont board majority also affirmed its resolve to keep depleting bond funds without waiting for the state's decision, effectively thumbing its nose at the authority of both the state and county, plaintiffs contend. Not all of the Grossmont board agrees with the actions of the majority. One trustee, Priscilla Schreiber, has consistently opposed the board majority's actions and supports the wishes of Alpine parents. Given the outcome of the November election, which saw opponents of the Alpine objectives reelected and a formerly ousted board member who also opposed the Alpine High School regain his seat, legal action is likely the only hope Alpine parents have of preserving funding for their long-anticipated school. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego State University has issued a safety alert for students after a report of an attempted kidnapping early Sunday morning. An SDSU student was walking home on 55th Street and Aztec Walk shortly after midnight when she dropped her phone. Before she could retrieve it, a man in a gold and silver Toyota Camry with a sunroof picked up the phone and went back to the vehicle, which had several passengers. Minutes later, that vehicle returned and the man offered the phone back to the victim. As she approached the vehicle, one of the occupants tried to pull her into the car. The victim was able to escape, uninjured, and call the police. Two of the suspects are described as African-American men. One had a slender build, was about 5'7" to 6 feet tall, with short black curly hair and several tattoos on his chest and arms. He was wearing khaki pants, camouflage boxers, and was not wearing a shirt. The second suspect wore a flannel shirt. There are no descriptions of the other suspects in the vehicle. Campus officials urge students to be aware of their surroundings and report suspicious activities to police by dialing 911. If you have any information on this case, you can send an email to police@mail.sdsu.edu or call 619-594-1991. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
A two-year investigation conducted by the Republican-controlled House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence into terrorist acts on U.S. facilities in Benghazi, Libya, has resulted in publication of a report on November 21st, which concludes that accusations made by the Republican leaders over Benghazi are false. The committee found no wrongdoing by any Obama administration officials. Moreover, the report concludes that the CIA and U.S. military acted appropriately before, during, and after the Benghazi attacks that killed four Americans. The following points are direct quotes from the committee's conclusions. The CIA ensures sufficient security for facilities in Benghazi and, without a requirement to do so, ably and bravely assisted the State Department on the night of the attacks. Their actions saved lives. Appropriate U.S. personnel made reasonable tactical decisions that night, and the committee found no evidence that there was either a stand-down order or a denial of available air support. There was no intelligence failures prior to the attacks. A mixed group of individuals, including those affiliated with al-Qaeda, participated in the attacks on U.S. facilities in Benghazi, although the committee finds that the intelligence was and remains conflicting about the identities, affiliations, and motivations of the attackers. The committee found no evidence that any officer was intimidated, wrongly forced to sign a non-disclosure agreement, or otherwise kept from speaking to Congress. The committee also found no evidence that the CIA conducted unauthorized activities in Benghazi and no evidence that the incident commander shipped arms to Syria. The investigation did find that security was overwhelmed by the attackers at the State Department facility, where two diplomats were killed. The committee's investigation also found that contrary intelligence reports led to the CIA's initial incorrect assessment that the attacks arose out of a protest in Benghazi. The CIA corrected its initial assessment after closed-caption television footage became available. A week after the September 11, 2012 attacks, and 2 days after then-Ambassador Susan Rice spoke publicly on the matter, also after FBI interviews with officials on the ground in Libya were published on September 22nd. Mistakes in talking points provided to Rice were due to conflicting intelligence from multiple agencies based on information available at the time, not due to any errors made by Rice or the Obama administration. Rice is now the National Security Advisor. The report confirms many findings of six prior investigations by congressional committees, as well as a panel appointed by the State Department. Associated Press and others have reported that the Intelligence Committee's report debunks the key claims by Republican leaders who had sought to discredit handling of the attacks by the Obama administration and the then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, a likely presidential candidate. Democrats have long contended that the flurry of investigations were politically motivated, and now even a Republican-led intelligence committee failed to find any wrongdoings by the Obama administration. As for holding those responsible accountable, a Libyan militant extremist, Ahmed Abu Qatalia, has been captured in Libya and extradited to the U.S., where he will stand trial on murder charges in the Benghazi killings. The House Intelligence Committee's report was made after 2 years of intensive investigation and examinations of thousands of documents and hearings. In conclusion, states that this report is meant to serve as the definitive House statement on the intelligence community's activities before, during, and after the Benghazi attacks. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Local astronomer Robert Quimby almost deleted an email which began, "Congratulations, you have won $33,000," thinking it was junk mail. Then the director of San Diego State University's Mount Laguna Observatory read further and learned that the money is real. His share of a $3 million prize for research which helped prove that expansion of our universe is accelerating, San Diego State's News Center reports. The Breakthrough Prize in Fundamental Physics honors Quimby for his share of the investigation, which started 15 years ago, back when he was an undergraduate research assistant. He was working on the supernova cosmology project along with Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory astrophysicist Saul Perlmutter, who shared a Nobel Prize in Physics for the project's landmark discoveries back in 2011. Quimby applied data collected from light emitted by distant supernova and calculated two variables, omega matter, which measures average density of the universe, and omega lambda, measuring inflation of the universe. His research helped disprove the long-held theory that the universe's expansion had been slowing down since the Big Bang and would eventually stop. Instead, his data showed that expansion of our universe is speeding up, although why this occurring is still a mystery waiting to be solved. Quimby said of his findings on post-Big Bang expansion, "It turned out to be bigger than I could have imagined." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
An autopsy by the county medical examiner has confirmed that a man found dead near railroad tracks in Lemon Grove was a homicide victim. He has been identified as Dale Robert Wheeler, age 55. The sheriff's homicide details investigating the death of Wheeler, whose body was found at the intersection of Lemon Grove Avenue and Palm Street early in the morning on November 16th. "The man has visible signs of traumatic injury," said Lieutenant Kevin Nelson. No suspect has been identified. Anyone with information about Wheeler's death is asked to call the sheriff's homicide unit at 858-974-2321. You can also remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to an arrest by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. This has been Leon Thompson for East County Magazine.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, I am very delighted to welcome Anthony Mostardo, who is the maestro, the conductor of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Yes, glad to be here.
Now, you have quite an impressive bio. You have a Master of Music degree from DePaul University, a Certificate of Advanced Studies in Aesthetic Education from the University of Illinois. You've been a music coordinator at a school district in Chicago. You're a Spring Valley resident, and you have founded a number of musical organizations, including the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. That's quite a lot of accomplishments.
Yes, thank you.
Now, I understand that the chorus and orchestra have done a number of tours, including Europe. You've gone to the Czech Republic, Hungary, Austria, Iceland, Scandinavia, and Italy, performing in the major concert halls and the great cathedrals of Europe, as well as St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican.
That's correct. In 1978, our chorus traveled through Europe. And one of the highlights of that particular tour was a concert that was arranged for us. My cousin, who was the business manager for the Sistine Chapel Choir in the Vatican, arranged it. We were one of only seven choruses throughout the world at that time to have been performing in St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. We were part of a mass that was conducted that particular Sunday morning. And it was attended by 26 cardinals, and I think it was 13 bishops. It was broadcast on Italian radio and also televised. So we're very fortunate to have had that wonderful privilege.
What a marvelous experience that must have been.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about the chorus and the orchestra itself, how it got started, what the vision was for all of that.
Well, actually, I enjoy music, obviously. I first started a chorus back in Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, at William Rainey Harper. We started a chorus there. We had close to 150 members. We had 25 members waiting to join us. We were a non-audition chorus. We hired musicians from the Chicago Symphony. We got soloists from Northwestern University. Dr. Richard Alderson, a very good friend of mine, who was the head of the department at Northwestern, oftentimes allowed us to feature some of his very talented students. And after I retired from that organization, I came to San Diego, and that was back in 1998. I found myself for 2 years doing not much of anything, so I decided to start another chorus and orchestra. And so in 2001, we had our first concert. We performed, by the way, Vivaldi's Gloria, the same piece that we are performing December the 7th, Sunday, at the College Avenue Baptist Church.
Very good. What time is the performance going to be?
The performance is at 3 o'clock, Sunday, December the 7th. That's actually Pearl Harbor Day, so it's one easy to remember.
Very good. What can you tell us about Vivaldi's Gloria? We're going to play a little excerpt here in a moment, but can you give our listeners a little education about the piece and the composer?
Yes. Well, of course, Antonio Vivaldi is a very prolific Italian composer. He is probably along with Johann Sebastian Bach, a part of the Baroque composers. He's a Venetian composer. He has written countless numbers of work. He's probably most famous for the Four Seasons, but he has written much more music, certainly, and a lot of instrumental music, vocal music. He has quite a fantastic background. He was called the composer with the flaming red hair. He was a member of a woman's retirement community and nursery that attended to younger children as well. And being a composer and living there, he had the natural surrounding for creating this wonderful music. And so we are very fortunate, again, to be able to perform his music this coming December 7th.
We're going to play a little excerpt for you listeners. Here's a treat today from Vivaldi's Gloria, performed by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra.
Thank you.
Wonderful music. What other pieces are going to be performed at the concert on December 7th?
Yes. We always feature a lighter piece of music for the second portion of our program. We've selected a piece that is just a wonderful piece of music. It's fantastically orchestrated and arranged, by the way, Robert Shaw, the conductor of the San Diego Symphony many years ago,
yes,
who moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and conducted the symphony there, actually composed this along with another composer, Robert Russell Bennett, the composer of the music score for Victory at Sea. So you can see that that music, if you are familiar with it at all, is just a wonderful piece of music. It's a full Hollywood Bowl symphonic sound.
Marvelous.
And it features all the wonderful carols that normally people listen to and sing during the holidays, but done in a wonderful, fantastic symphonic arrangement.
We're all looking forward to that. Now, I understand that the chorus is non-sectarian, so apart from the Christmas holiday music, what are some of the other types of things that the chorus performs along with the orchestra?
In addition to performing our major two concerts a year, we do a winter concert and we do a spring concert, usually the first week in December and then also the first week in May. We also do a lot of outreach performances. We perform in community centers. We perform in retirement communities. We perform for groups that are not able to come to our concert. In fact, with the assistance of the Rotary Club of San Diego, we are actually able to provide bus transportation for these folks that are shut-ins, and we bring them to our concert, and they enjoy it immensely.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like a terrific group. If people are interested in becoming involved, mm-hmm, how does one try out or become a member, mm-hmm, of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra?
Right. Orchestra members, of course, are hired. Mm-hmm. We actually pay them a fee for performing for us, but chorus members are not. We simply do not have what we call auditions to join our chorus. I do have a telephone interview with them. I ask that I have a chance to speak to them and find out a little bit about their background, their musical experiences, and of course, if they do read music, certainly this is an asset for us because they come somewhat prepared to learn the many challenging works that we perform. In fact, over the 14 years that we've been in existence, we have actually performed over 57 major choral works. Most often at the holidays, at Christmas time, most organizations perform the Messiah. Well, we perform the Messiah several times, but in addition to that, we expose our chorus and orchestra members to new music, music that normally is not performed, and this expands their knowledge of music and so on. So they don't need to be auditioned. They hopefully would have some background in music, some choral music, singing in a temple or a church. That would be preferable.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a large group. I understand you have 90 members now, and as well as 48 orchestra members.
That's correct. We started back in 2001 with about 36 members, and over the years we have progressed consistently, and now our current membership is about 90 members. We are an SATB, that's a soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, mm-hmm, full vocal chorus. As I said, our musicians are paid. They're actually non-professionals. There are people who are business people who are professionals, but come and like to perform with us.
And are they from all over the county or primarily East County?
Actually, we have membership that comes from all over the county. We've had people from as far away as Temecula, and El Centro to join us.
And where are the rehearsals held?
We rehearse at the Hillsdale Middle School in Rancho San Diego, which is a subdivision of El Cajon.
So right here in East County.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Again, listeners, if you tuned in late, we have been interviewing Maestro Anthony Mastardo, who is the conductor of the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra, which started right here in East County and has quite a long list of accomplishments. They are going to be presenting a joyful holiday music celebration on December 7th at 3 o'clock at the College Avenue Baptist Church near San Diego State. And if people want to get tickets or they want to get more information, Maestro, where can they go to get that information?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question. That's an important question.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we have a website. It's www.sandiegofestivalchorus.org. If you will log on to our website, you can get all of the information about our coming concert, information about joining our chorus, and anything else concerning ticket prices and so on. We would love to have you come. It's going to be a fantastic concert. Our attendance usually is in the range of about 1,200 people.
Wow.
So we do have a very good following, and we hope that you will be part of that for this coming concert.
Well, very good, and I might add that you can also listen to some more of this wonderful music when you go to that website at sandiegofestivalchorus.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, Maestro, and I'm certainly looking forward to trying to make it out to the concert on December 7th.
And thank you so very much for inviting me.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ this Thanksgiving week. In honor of Native American Heritage Month, we would like to replay for you our interview with Kumeyaay Elder Charlie Brown.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM from beautiful Descanso, high in the Laguna Mountains. And I'm Leon Thompson. I'm here with the Tribal Beat. And today's honored guest is Charlie Brown, who is a longtime ambassador at large for the Kumeyaay Nation. Next to Geronimo, he's my favorite Indian. And we have him here in the studio today. Charlie is witness to many of the changes that have come about in the 19 Indian tribes in our East County area, and we're really privileged to have him here today. Charlie's devoted his life to philanthropic work on behalf of himself and the Indian tribes in East County, San Diego. Welcome to East County Magazine, Charlie.
It's a pleasure to be here and to speak of our nations, our Kumeyaay Nation.
Charlie, before we start talking about your experiences in firefighting as a hotshot and a smoke jumper, recently you were honored by the Byrne Institute.
Yeah, well, I was honored for the Byrne Institute gave me an award. I've been involved with the Byrne Institute for many years and actually spoke at the Byrne Institute camp for the Byrne kids. And it's an amazing place. It's an amazing place to donate money. To see the kids have a wonderful time and not be shamed because all the kids are there for one reason, because they're all been burned. There's nobody to tease them. I was even involved with the one down in Imperial Valley. don't realize how many people, how many kids come out of Imperial Valley, too, that are burnt. If you've ever been burnt severely, it really hurts. And what they go through, and you have to scrub that, and the skin grafts, and all of that other stuff that those little kids and some of those older kids to go through. And then you have to go to school and have those kids tease you because you're sometimes a little deformed after some of the surgeries and surgeries you go through. And the spirit that they have and the strength that they have to deal with that. And the Burn Institute gives them one chance a week in a camp where they're all the same, different people getting together and having one of the most wonderful times that they ever have. And making new friends. So if you ever get a chance, any chance to donate to the Burn Institute, do it if you can. I've been involved with them a lot. Kiwanis, Alpine, they do a wonderful job. One of the largest organizations. Alpine, if you ever ask for help, they're there for you. It's kind of somebody that, like me, can never say no.
Well, we're thankful that you're that way. And you've been giving back to the community for a long time.
Yes, and 24/7. That's the problem. One of the greatest things I was involved with, there was about five or six of us that sat down and talked about a wall of honor in Alpine. We kicked it around, and a lot of people thought, where are we going to get the money? We started out thinking where we can get the money. And at the time, I was working at Viejas at that time, and we stepped up to the plate and gave them some money. We held some fundraisers there at Viejas Forum, and we started building the money. Still, people were doubting that we'd ever build something like that because there's a lot of organizations out there that start something and never finish them. But we were determined to get it done. We worked hard, a lot of meetings, a lot of planning. It was tough, but we were very determined, so we got the wall done. I think there's 38 Kumeyaay veterans on the wall. And let me tell you, in the early age, a long time ago, there was a law written in the United States that said Indians could not go to war. They were supposed to stay here and defend the United States. The Indians said, that's not right. We want to go to war and fight for the United States. This is our country. We were here first. And we will go to war, no matter what the United States says. And they were the largest ones to step up and go to war. Last count was over 200,000 that I know of that went to war. I have many uncles that went to war, many cousins who went to war.
Yeah, it was tradition in our family to do that.
Yes, it was. It was tradition for our people to do that. Tradition for all nations to do that.
Now, before that, or around that time, Charlie, when you were a young man, you were jumping out of perfectly good airplanes.
Can you
tell us a little bit about your hotshot history?
Yeah, I was a fireman. I worked for the Forest Service for many years, but so did my uncles and my dad. It was kind of into our blood, our Indian blood, because a lot of nations have firefighters that do the same thing. And I followed my father's and my uncle's background, and I joined when I was 18. I worked my way up through the ranks and became my superintendent of the hotshots. Ran a crew of about 21 and been a lot of places. But before I got there one time, I asked me if I wanted to go to smoke jumping school. And I said, yeah, I'll try it. Did about everything else I could do. So I went to the smoke jumping school and I learned how to jump out of a perfect airplane. And I thought that was the craziest thing in the world. My first jump landed in a tree, but the top of the tree was dead and went flying through the tree like I was Superman and went crashing through that like it was nothing. Then I got stuck in it. I had to pull all my parachute down and all that other stuff and pack up and walk out. You know, 110 pounds of weight on your back, it wasn't very fun. It was only about a half mile walk, but it was heavy.
Well, for the people who don't know, they would drop you at the head of the fire. That fire is coming right at you, and it's like the last resort to bring in the hot shots and dump them out of an airplane in the front of the path of the fire to cut a fire break.
So. Yeah, so it was fun.
Yes,
it was interesting because when they dropped you in, you were the last resort because there was no roads, there was no way of getting there, right. And so they dropped you in and dropped everything to you. You were the last resort until help got there. Sometimes help didn't get there.
Get there in time.
Yeah. So you were there for maybe several days, like maybe several weeks. So it was
your tinfoil sleeping bag, right?
Yeah, whatever you could find to keep warm, you kept warm. If it was a big hole in the dirt. That's where it was. It wasn't the most peaceful place, but fire changes so quickly, you know, and I've been in situations where fires changed quickly and survived, but I've had several close calls in fire, but you learn from it. We have what they call firefighter standard rules that you're supposed to follow, and that was all brought because of fire situations where people lost their lives, and we're supposed to follow them. But sometimes we stretch them, you know, we just stretch them just on the borderline. And we're getting a lot of new people in. It's easy to learn out of a book, but sometimes common sense is what you need.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and we don't have that sometimes, and it's important that we do, real important, because we still could, you know, we got rain just the other day. East winds are coming. The brush is still dry. You walk in it today, you can hear it crack. It's not over with. We've got a long ways to go. We still got November.
Yes.
And even December, mm-hmm. you know, so they're talking maybe some thunderstorms again. So it's not done. All you guys out there, beware of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Be safe, because we don't need anybody else. I've heard deployments. I've heard burnovers already. We're sticking our neck out there we don't need to do. We can replace material things.
Mm-hmm.
We can replace those things that people lose. How do we value life?
Right.
You know, it's important, especially if you have family. How do you do that? You know, it's sad to see. Creator put us here on earth for a reason. Please, you guys out there that's doing all this, don't stick your neck out there. You're not asbestos. Just remember, fight the battles you can win and step back of the ones you're going to lose.
Speaking of fires, the Viejas Fire Department, John Butts, chief out there, and Viejas and the Barona tribes are really often the first line of defense in a brush fire. They're the first ones out there, not only to protect the tribes and the reservations, but really protect us in the cities. As we saw in the Cedar Fire, the Harris Fire, they burn right down into the, practically to the sea. They started out here in East County, where we live. So we're aware of this all the time.
Yeah, that's true. And you even got to look at Saquon. Saquon's there too, you know, and all these backcountry firefighters that are out there, like Saquon, Barona, Viejas, Campo, all these Rincon, Paula, all these reservation tribes are wonderfully trained. They're A1 trained. They're out there fighting these fires. I see them every day. I watch them every day. I worked around them every day. These guys are one of the highest trained people that you could deal with. And if you get a chance, give some money to Make-A-Wish, because some of those kids may not be there. And one other thing we're involved with is called Prom Night. And it's for kids that maybe never get to see their prom because they have cancer. And it's held down at Hall of Champions. And Drew Brees has something to do with this one. He rents all the limos. And he comes down, and all the alumnos come down. They have a red carpet to come in. Everything's donated. A big party. They dance and this and that. We've been involved with them for about 10 years. And what was really cool about it is sometimes you've been there 10 years, and you know some of the kids, and you miss them because they're not there when you come back the next year.
So tell me about your experience in Valencia.
Okay, well, we're on a fire called the Pacoima Fire, and we're working down canyon, and we kept coming out about six times, and the seventh time we told them we weren't coming out, and fire was coming. It was about 2:30 in the morning, and it blew over us, and when we got down to the bottom of the canyon, there was a bunch of ladybugs, and I had a yellow shirt on. And it turned out to be all red because the ladybugs covered us completely with be millions of ladybugs down in that canyon bottom. And a fire blew over us, and we walked out the other side where the other crew was coming down towards us. And you could see where they dropped all their tools and everything, and they were burnt all up. You can see their chainsaws melted all on the ground, and their nozzles and their hose and all the stuff that they left behind, their tools and everything were melted. We walked out the other side. Everybody thought we burned up in the bottom of the canyon, but no, we made it out. Okay, but
you and the ladybugs survived.
Yeah, me and the ladybugs survived, and five other guys survived. So it was kind of interesting to watch the fire go over you.
Yes, I can imagine. Have you ever had the experience of seeing a tree get so hot that it explodes?
Yes, I've had them. I've actually seen trees explode, and I've actually seen brush pulled out of the ground. I've seen rocks fly at you. I've seen street, those little white things alongside the road you see to keep so at night, so it'll keep you see. I've seen them melt, and I've seen asphalt bubble that has been so hot. So as you drive along, I've seen those little white things as you're driving along in a truck just melt alongside the road as you're driving.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, it does get a little warm.
Our special guest has been Charlie Brown, Kumeyaay elder and ambassador from the Kumeyaay Nation. Thank you so much for being with us, Charlie.
It's a real honor to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
This has been the first of a two-part interview with Charlie Brown. The next time Charlie and I get together, I'm going to ask him about the water situation in the East County. Why are the lakes going dry? Charlie knows the answer. I'm going to ask about gaming in San Diego County. How did it get started? I'm going to ask about the Los Coyotes Indian Reservation and the changes in the desert in Ocotillo. All those things and more the next time we get together on East County Magazine's Tribal Beat.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with some Thanksgiving turkey tips for you. Just how long are you planning to thaw that turkey? 24 hours for every 5 pounds of weight is the correct answer. And what's the best way to cook the stuffing? Separately, of course. Thanksgiving is the biggest home cooking event of the year. You want everything to be perfect, but also safe. The last thing anybody wants is uninvited bacteria party crashers that could make your guests sick. But never fear, here are 5 steps from the San Diego County Department of Environmental Health to make this your best and safest Thanksgiving meal ever. Plan ahead, clean, separate, cook, and chill. First, plan ahead. Before you start cooking, decide how much food you can safely serve. For example, figure out how much cooking and refrigerator space you have available to work with. Do you plan to defrost a frozen turkey? If so, make sure you have enough space and time to safely and slowly thaw your turkey in the refrigerator. Defrosting it in the open air or in still water encourages bacterial growth. A large turkey needs at least 24 hours for every 5 pounds of weight to defrost inside the refrigerator. Make sure your meat thermometer is ready for the busy day and always buy food from a safe source such as a market or a restaurant. Second, clean. Don't let bacteria into your meal. Wash your hands before and after handling food to avoid contamination. Thoroughly rinse raw fruits and vegetables. Wash and sanitize the counters, cutting boards, and equipment before and after preparing your holiday feast. Third, separate. Keep produce, fruits, and vegetables separated from raw meat products. When defrosting the turkey, place it on a plate or in a pan at the bottom of your refrigerator to keep it from dripping on other foods. Once the bird is defrosted, it can remain refrigerated for 1 to 2 days before it needs to be cooked. Use separate cutting boards for meat and fruit and vegetables, and be sure to wash them after each use. Fourth, cook. Cook the turkey and stuffing to 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Use a meat thermometer to be sure that proper cooking temperatures are reached. You can test to make sure the entire turkey has been cooked to an internal temperature by inserting the meat thermometer in the innermost part of the turkey's thigh. The safest way to cook stuffing, of course, is separately outside of the turkey. Germs can thrive in the stuffing ingredients if it's improperly cooked inside the bird. Gravy should be reheated to a boil, and leftovers should be reheated to 165 degrees before eating. Fifth, chill. Keep cold foods chilled to 41 degrees Fahrenheit or lower. If you're preparing the food ahead of time, refrigerate it to minimize bacterial growth. Refrigerate all leftovers in shallow containers within 2 hours of cooking. Cut the leftover turkey into small pieces or slices before refrigerating. For more information and food safety tips for the holidays, you can go to the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food Safety and Inspection Service website, and that's www.foodsafety.gov. Or you can call the Meat and Poultry Hotline at 1-888-674-6854 and have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio here in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And today my very special guest is Captain Terry Masango. Terry is the Corps Officer and the pastor at Salvation Army, and he is here today to talk about some good things they're doing to help people in need for Thanksgiving, as well as the East County Toy and Food Drive for the Christmas holidays. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Let's start by talking about something new this year. You're having a Thanksgiving drive-through food drive. Tell us about that.
Yes. So here in East County, we have many families who are struggling to purchase food for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. So we felt that it was important to provide food baskets for them for this season. So last year, we purchased meals for 500 families that we gave them to go home and prepare for the holiday.
For Thanksgiving.
Yes. Unfortunately, because of how tough the economy is, we were unable this year to purchase the food. Mm. So we dreamt up the great idea of doing a Thanksgiving drive-through food drive. We thought we would make it easier for people on their way to work. They would just drive through our parking lot. They hand us a turkey or any of the fixings and keep driving on to work.
Very nice. And that's going to be held on Tuesday, November 25th from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. And listeners, if you want to stop by that morning, the address for that
is 1011 East Main here in El Cajon, 1011 East Main at the Salvation Army building. You just drive through. You don't even need to get out of your car. If you don't have a turkey or any of the Thanksgiving fixings, we will have kettles lining up so you can donate, and then we can dash over and purchase the food for the families.
Very good. And besides frozen turkeys, some of the fixings that are recommended include cans of black olives, boxes of breadcrumbs, bread cubes, brown sugar, canned pumpkin, chicken broth, cornbread mix, cream of mushroom soup, cranberry sauce, milk powder, French fried onions, and, of course, canned green beans for those green bean casseroles everyone likes to make for Thanksgiving.
Yes. We know that sometimes the grocery stores will have a buy one, get one free.
Right.
So just buy, bring us the free one, and we'll gladly put it to great use on Tuesday.
Very good. Now, in addition to providing these meals for folks to be thankful for on Thanksgiving, you are also working up for this year's East County Toy and Food Drive, which is by far the largest toy and food drive to help families across our region. How many families are you hoping to help this year?
This year for the East County Toy and Food Drive, we're expecting to serve about 1,500 families. We anticipate helping 1,200 families here in the city areas, and then another 300 families in the backcountry. I don't know if many of you knew this. The Salvation Army is present in the backcountry. We have a satellite office in Pine Valley.
I didn't know that.
And our staff, they go around and distribute food in all the areas in the backcountry.
So there's rural residents. Yeah.
The rural residents, yes.
Now, if someone listening out there, if their family is in need or they know somebody who is, how do families sign up to be on the list to receive these gift baskets, which, by the way, include both food and toys,
and toys.
I understand.
Yes. Any families who are interested, if they have access to the Internet, you can get all the registration information at SalvationArmyElCajon.com. SalvationArmyElCajon.com. We have pages and pages of Christmas help and Thanksgiving information. But you could also call our office at 619-440-4685. 619-440-4685.
And I understand that there are going to be sign-up days coming up on December 6th, December 8th, and 9th for families in need.
Yes. So for those who are in the city's area, we are providing an opportunity for families to come to the Salvation Army very early by 6 a.m. We'll give out numbers and we'll serve about 500 people that day registering them.
So it's a first-come,
first-come, first-serve. And then we'll also, for those who miss that day on that Saturday, December 6th, you can come on Monday the 8th or Tuesday the 9th
and
in the evenings.
What are the qualifications for someone to be eligible?
Basically, we just ask that they bring information about themselves and their family. So we are asking for a picture ID and social security card if they have it, and for their kids as well. We know that many families, maybe it's a grandma taking care of grandkids.
Yeah.
So if they have social security cards or medical coupons for the kids, that will work.
Okay. And what do each of the gift baskets include?
So for the food, it's basically almost all the food you read earlier for Thanksgiving, except that we substitute turkey for ham. But we also provide toys for the children. The toys are, we provide two stocking stuffers and two big toys for each child up to age 12. So once again, if you are interested in helping your family who lives here in East County, go to the Salvation Army website, which is salvationarmyelkhorn.com, or call us at 619-440-4685, or just come to our offices here in Elkhorn, 1011 East Main.
And you can bring a new unwrapped toy or a donation.
Yes.
The next thing coming up for this is the Stoney and Rob's Holiday Party and Auction, which is held every year at Viejas. And Viejas, I understand, is the largest donor to the toy drive each year.
They are the largest donor. They give us a donation of $15,000 in cash at the event. Mm-hmm. They host the whole party, Stoney and Rob's Holiday Auction and Party. They also provide toys. So every year they've stepped up on their donations. Last year they surprised us when they did their big reveal. Mm-hmm. They gave us 12,000 toys.
Wow.
And this year I understand they are shooting for even more than that.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing event. This year it's going to be Wednesday, December 10th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Viejas Hotel. This is an outdoor event this year, by the way. They don't have the Dreamcatcher Lounge.
They're yes.
costing people dressed warmly. It will be outdoors. They have
yes.
the auction. People can bring a new unwrapped toy right there. And,
yes.
and then they open the stage every year, and they
yes.
they
It just fills it.
It's so much. I think they must have had to get a bigger stage or something.
Yes.
It's just overflowing with toys out there.
Yes. We would love for the community to please support us by coming to this party on December 10th at Viejas. Make sure that you just provide us with all the things we need to help our community.
Yeah, I understand they ask, they get their employees involved, their patrons at the casino, the outlet malls,
as well
as the general public
yes.
to all participate in the toy drive. Now, once you have all of these toys collected and all of the food, then you have another really fun event coming up, which is the Fire Truck and Toy Parade.
Yes.
Tell us when and where that's going to be this year.
The fire truck parade starts at the fire department in downtown Elkhorn, and we march down up to the Target parking lot, which is at the corner of Broadway and also very close to where 67 goes by Broadway at the Target parking lot. At that, we have a kind of carnival event where we're face painting for kids, different activities for kids, a bounce house and different things, but also Kogo Radio will be broadcasting live, so people who have donations can bring them and can be interviewed and tell the community why they're supporting the East County Toy and Food
Wonderful.
Drive.
And then they have all the firefighters bringing in the toys aboard the fire truck, so it's quite
yes.
a spectacle.
We also have a Mini Cooper Club that comes down, over 60 Mini Coopers.
Mm-hmm.
They drive down Broadway and bring toys. It's just a magnificent
wow,
sight.
I didn't know about that.
Yes.
Marvelous. And that event, the Fire Truck and Toy Parade, is going to be held on Saturday, December 13th from 9 a.m. to noon.
Yes.
Very good. So, again, I've been speaking, listeners, for those who turned in late, with Captain Terry Masango, who is the Corps Officer and Pastor at the Salvation Army in Elkhorn, serving East County. We've
yes.
been talking about the East County Toy and Food Drive. And for people who want to get more information on that or on the Thanksgiving drive-through food donation on the 25th of November, you can go to www.salvationarmyelkhorn.com or call area code 619-440-4683. Thank you very much, Pastor Masango, for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to serve East County. Thank you.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Consultants hired by renewable energy companies in recent years have consistently claimed that there are no golden eagles in the Hukumba Boulevard planning areas where several major energy projects are proposed or planned. But two residents of Hukumba now report seeing golden eagles in the past 10 days, including one documented with a photograph. The first sighting, a pair of eagles, was over the town itself. The second was directly across from the Hukumba Solar Project and a proposed power line tie-in to the Eco substation. Golden eagles' populations are threatened in the San Diego region, with only 46 pairs remaining in the county, according to the Cleveland National Forest website, which states that eagles are very sensitive to disturbances by people. Power lines can electrocute raptors, and construction of any major project can be potentially disruptive. The first sighting in Hukumba was made on October 30th by well-known birdwatcher Eric Callen, who runs the website HukumbaBirding.com. He reported seeing a pair of golden eagles and provided a photograph of one. The second sighting was reportedly made by a resident in the Gray Mountain, Table Mountain area. Howard Cook, chair of the Hukumba Sponsor Group, the town's planning board, says the resident, who prefers not to be generally known but is extremely reliable, says a golden eagle can be seen most days on the ridgeline above his property. Cook notified officials in state and federal wildlife agencies and to the county to be included in the record for the Hukumba Solar Project proposal. An eagle expert hired to conduct studies for other projects, including Tule Wind, which the federal government approved, was convicted in federal court of withholding key information from wildlife authorities after pocketing hundreds of thousands of dollars from the wind industry. The recent sightings further bolster arguments by residents who contend that new studies are needed by reliable wildlife experts.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.